You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Patrick Reed wins the Masters at Augusta to claim his first major title.
It was definitely probably the hardest mentally a round of golf could possibly be. Everyone else was saying how great I was playing all week, how very impressed they were. But then, you know, come Saturday night and Sunday morning, they're like, oh, well, we think Rory's going to win. Okay, well, that takes off a little bit of that pressure off of me because I can just go out and try and play golf.
We'll hear more from Reed later, who took the green jacket by just one shot in the end, not from Rory, but from fellow American Ricky Fowler, who thinks his time will come.
I am ready to go win a major, but this was kind of the first major week that I've understood that and known that and felt that. So I'm really looking forward to this year and the three majors that are left.
We've a comprehensive review of the Masters, and then we look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, this week's Open de España. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say that this week I am joined by former European Tour winner Richard Boxall. Richard, how are you?
I'm all right, yes. I stayed up late last night.
To watch the Masters, obviously.
Of course, it was a very good sporting day all round yesterday, wasn't it? And you'd be very pleased to know I made a roast during the day as well.
Really?
Yes.
What the roast chicken, beef? Roast chicken?
No, chicken.
Now, chicken's not traditional Sunday, is it, Boxall?
No, but it's light, isn't it? You know what I mean? And there's a special way. I won't tell you now, but there's a special way I make my roast potatoes. Because I'm getting into a bit of cooking.
Okay.
There was a lot of veg, and all in all, it was very good. And there was a couple of soft drinks taken.
So you're all set fair to watch the final day of the Masters. What did you make of Patrick Reed's success? For me, I thought he always held the field at a five irons length. I know that they got close, but no one actually passed it.
Very early on, if McIlroy had held, he had a brilliant second shot into the second. I think if he'd hold that, I think the whole day could have been different because Reed didn't have a comfy start, did he?
No, he didn't. He buggered the first.
Yeah, had a very uncomfortable start. And, you know, McIlroy got away with it. Massive block to the right off the tee at the first. But then, as we all saw with the RF cameras behind him, could go through the tree, which was fine, and did do that. And made his par that way from, I think it was the front of the green, wasn't it? Good two putt. But brilliant second shot off, a good drive at the second for McIlroy. And you sort of saw his shoulders go a little bit. I mean, I always feel, you know, with Rory, that he almost wants to say, I mean, nobody feels sorry for him because he's a great player, but you just want to say, look, can I just win the Masters and just get on with my life, please? You know, it's almost that. Do you know what I mean? Everyone whacks so much pressure on him. You know, go Masters, Masters. Now he's got to wait another 12 months. You just sort of feel if he could win it, we could all get on and move on.
Longer it goes on, worse it's going to get.
The worse it is going to get. Yeah.
Every single year. What about that? What about 2011? What about 2018, Rory?
He didn't putt. I mean, you know, what was he? 75 yesterday. 74, sorry, compared to 65 in the third round. Nine rounds.
But everyone's going low. Everyone who's challenging is going low. Everyone who's trying to get up there and beat Patrick Reed is going low.
He just putted badly. It's as simple as that. You know, if he putts well, he shoots 68 and then ties for the lead.
And I'm also delighted to say that we are joined from the US by golf broadcaster Matt Adams, who can be seen on the Golf Channel and, of course, hosts SiriusXM's Fairways of Life on PGA Tour Radio every single weekday. Matt, how are you? What did you make of the 2018 edition of the Masters?
Gentlemen, good day to all of you. I thought it was an absolutely compelling Masters. I thought it was entertaining on so many different levels, so many different storylines. You know, so often in sport, and I think certainly in the game of golf, we come in with high expectations and we tend to pre-write the story for better or for worse. It's just the nature of sport, isn't it? But this was one that delivered. It just did what golf always does. It wrote its own story and didn't deliver the one that we had all thought for, maybe hoped for. But in the end, it was greatly entertaining.
Patrick Reed, of course, held off a charging Ricky Fowler and Jordan Spieth to win the Masters tournament after a dramatic final day at Augusta National. He signed for a 71 to finish at 15 under and beat Ricky Fowler by a single shot. Reed started the day, of course, with a three-shot lead over Rory McIlroy, but Rory never really got going and tied fifth in the end. All the stats, Boxy, suggested that no one was going to come from behind to deny Patrick Reed. That proved to be the case, but boy, did it get close. Jordan Spieth, we've got to talk about first of all, because he started the day some nine shots off the pace and was phenomenal on the Sunday.
He was absolutely brilliant. The trouble with Spieth was he was running out of holes. That was the only problem. He was always just, you know, he was three, sort of stroke four holes ahead all the time and always running out, especially when, you know, Reed's got 13 and 15 coming up, which everybody's sort of, they're what I call four and a half holes, you know what I mean? But there was always that chance. But you know what I think, and I want to ask Matt, everyone was hyping up McIlroy, obviously, you know, to do the slam. And from the second hole, it all just went wrong, didn't it?
Yeah, it was interesting because the golf swing of Rory McIlroy was different on Sunday than it was on Saturday. It was different than it looked, frankly, throughout most of the week. It seemed to get very tight. He was a different player. I mean,
do you think his swing got different, Matt, or do you think his body reaction after hitting the ball was very different? Because it was going slightly off line, left or right.
Yeah, he looked tight to me. It looked like the nerves were impacting him, that his shoulder turn didn't look as free as it normally was. Obviously, he was having an issue with the face. He wasn't getting the face square, wasn't getting the face closed. He wasn't putting the golf ball where he intended to put it. It just wasn't it wasn't the artist Rory who goes out there and paints with the brush. This was a guy with a hammer and a nail trying to put it in specific positions, and it kind of reared up all the demons again. You know, when Rory has issues on the greens, it almost always starts with his proximity to the hole. I mean, if you look at what Rory did, for example, on 16 all week, even when we saw players on, you know, on Thursday afternoon that were sticking it close and making birdies, even in grouping, he was always hanging out there on the right side of 16. There were just certain places where, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's the weight of the career Grand Slam or what it is with Rory, but Augusta National gets in his head, and it seemed to reach a crescendo yesterday when, you know, it was just I had picked Rory. He was my pick to win, and I stuck by it even on Sunday morning when I was asked, and many media sources, you know, will you change your mind now that he's trailing Patrick Reed? And said, no, you can make up three strokes and two holes, maybe one hole sometimes at Augusta National. And he looked like that was going to happen. But that one little miss there on the second, it was a very hard putt, incidentally, when he missed that eagle putt on two. But when he missed it, the way he missed it and the way that putter went off to the right. Dave Stockton told me years ago when he was working with Rory that Rory has a tendency, box, that when he comes into contact with the ball putting, that he tends to pick up and it opens a blade and he misses it on the right. And when he gets tight, it gets worse. And so what Stockton wanted him to do, and this was the advice he gave him in 14 at Liverpool, where you and I spent a lot of time together, he wanted him to make the one-inch putt after contact with the ball. He said to Rory, can you make a one-inch putt? Rory said, of course I can make a one-inch putt. He said, though, I want you to make the one-inch putt after contact. Just make that putt. Kept the blade low and on line and square to his line. Well, you saw yesterday the vast majority of his misses were once again off to the right, which was to me yet another indication that Rory just was a little tight. He just couldn't get over the moment.
We'll talk a little bit more about Rory shortly. Let's just bring it back to Patrick Reed, because whatever Rory didn't do, Patrick Reed managed to do. Did he control the event from the front? I know that Ricky Fowler got close, that Jordan Spieth got to 14 under before slipping on the final hole. Patrick got off to a bad start, Matt, with that bogey, but every single time he seemed to get himself into trouble or drop shots over the course of the last day, he managed to bounce back. Do you think he was in control of the tournament throughout the day?
No, I don't necessarily think that he was in control throughout the course of the day, but oftentimes we see that, don't we, in major championships where you have a player that leads and comes through, and after having won, it's easy to look back on it and go, well, they never really lost control. They had it the whole time. He had no control over what Rory was doing early in that round. If Rory had, how many putts do we see Rory miss within 10 feet?
Oh, six.
Again, set up by the shots. Yeah, so I mean, when we start to do the math, what happens if Rory catches him or eclipses him early in a round, and what impact would that have ultimately on the conclusion? So, no, I wouldn't, and I'm not taking anything away from Patrick Reed in saying that. I just think that in terms of retrospect, looking back on it and say it was a dominating performance in which Patrick Reed controlled it from the start, I think that would be an inaccurate synopsis. I think Patrick Reed did what Patrick Reed had to do in order to win ultimately, but in terms of being control at every turn, no, I wouldn't say that. What would you say, Boxy?
Yeah, no, I think you've got a point there. The other one I want to bring up is McIlroy got to within one very early, but not the second hole, on the third hole. You need a little bit of luck, you know, and Reed's putt on the third, you were there. That was going off the green if it had missed the hole.
Oh, yeah. Said afterwards it would still be rolling.
Yeah, it would still be going. It would just be making its way to sort of Atlanta Airport right now. But, I mean, it was, you know, you do need a little bit of luck. And I felt the whole thing swung round massively into Reed's favour after the first three holes. But, you know, we had people here that after two holes were cashing out because they were thinking, oh, my God, he looks so nervous, Reed. But, you know, but he was swinging well. I watched his swing, you know, lots and lots of times last night, you know, especially his iron play. He was really in the groove. He was swinging really well.
Yeah,
I'm going to say, certainly made some key birdies over the course of the 18 holes. And I was amazed the way that he bounced back, because every single time he was under a little bit of pressure, by hook or by crook, Boxy, he managed to get it done. And he put a lot of approaches pretty close, didn't he, to get some very comfortable birdies, even though he might have looked out on one or two of the others. I mean, you can look back over the course of the week and see one or two birdies that rattled the pin and dropped when they could have gone all over the place.
13 and 15. Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, when he chipped in on the 15th. But, you know, another thing, Dan, about these greens, and Matt will tell you, because he's got a silky smooth putting stroke, let me tell you, is that on greens, that when it's like putting on glass, if you've got any slight problems in your hands, in other words, nerves-wise, these greens will find you out like that. You'll not hole a thing, because you get so nervous you can't borrow enough. You can't get it on the right line. You're too nervous.
What about Patrick Reed's game management down the stretch then, Matt? Because, you know, Ricky Fowler was charging, Jordan Spieth was charging. We've seen better players, if you want to call it, than Patrick Reed fold under the pressure of Augusta. Jordan Spieth in particular, Rory McIlroy, we've seen come to grief. Would you not give Reed a bit of credit how he played those final few holes?
Oh, definitely would. Yes. I think Boxy defined it well, that you need fortune to smile upon you, and he had that. But he also took advantage of the moment, in that with Patrick Reed, and we saw this at the last Ryder Cup, Patrick Reed is an emotional player. And when Patrick Reed plays his best is when his back is up against the wall. And the best thing you can do for Patrick Reed is doubt him. So he carries, even through the press conference afterwards, he was talking about watching the network that I work for, Golf Channel, in the morning, right? And they went around the round table, just like we're talking now, and said, who do you got? Who do you got? Who do you got? Who do you got? And everyone in that panel said, Rory McIlroy is going to get it done today. He's going to come back. He's going to close. He's going to win the career Grand Slam, except for one guy. No to Begay. He said, no, I think Patrick Reed is going to get it done. In his press conference, fresh off being crowned victor of the Masters tournament, here Patrick Reed says, I just want to thank Nota Begay for having my back. Can imagine that. So it's almost like a political campaign, if you please. He is a player that plays well when he thinks that you don't think that he can get it done. That's when he becomes the Patrick Reed that we saw yesterday. Just like all of these players have this ability to morph into their superhero golfer. We see Jordan. He did it at Royal Birkdale. We saw Jordan do it yesterday. Just as Boxy said, ran out of time. We've seen Rory do it multiple times before in his major championship wins in other venues. Well, we just saw it again, this time on a major championship stage with Patrick Reed. And this Patrick Reed is one where he has to have something that channels him, something to say, I'm going to prove you wrong. And when he can, and frankly, Tiger used to do the same thing. When he can embed that seed into his mind, then that's when he becomes the Patrick Reed that can win.
Well, we can hear from the new Masters champion now, Patrick Reed.
To win your first majors is never going to be easy. And it definitely wasn't easy today. I mean, I knew it was going to be a dogfight. And, you know, it's just a way of God basically saying that, let's see if you have it. Everyone knows you have it physically, you know, with the talent, but do you have it mentally? Can you handle those ups and downs throughout the round? And I feel like that putt I made on 17 to basically keep my one-up lead going in the last, and to have that iron shot not come down the hill on 18, knowing that it's probably the fastest putt on the golf course, you know, it's just another one of those mini tests that I had to try to get over in order to, you know, win my first major.
I mean, just on that last hole, Matt, everybody thought it was going to trickle down the hill towards the hole. It didn't. The nerves will have been jangling greatly for Patrick Reed, and he too putted beautifully.
Yeah, he did. What I thought was interesting too was the comment just prior to that, which only underscores Boxy's earlier thought, that putt that he was talking about at 17 was what? 3 feet, maybe, and yet it was probably the most important putt of his golfing life, if not the, and it only serves to accentuate the reality that the greens at Augusta National, even on those little knee-knocking, soul-searching putts, if you are not exact putting to a blade, you know, it's inside the cup or it's just outside, but you better pick one blade of grass and hit it to your target, because it's just unforgiving. Yes, the putt that he had at 18 was incredibly fast, and that's the thing that television tends to flatten out the slopes, and television tends to take away the hill. You know, when you're coming up that hill, the grade coming up to the green on 18 is like 30 some odd feet up. Maybe you guys on Skyboxy did a graphic on that as you guys.
Yeah, I think it was 34 feet uphill.
And that putt coming down that slope, it was like putting down a marble staircase. And so he barely touched it. In fact, it released a little bit more than I thought he thought it was going to, which added only to the drama. But he closed it out. I mean, all full credit to him.
Matt, obviously you were there. When did the media center think that this is Patrick Reed's success here? Was it literally when the final putt dropped? Was it, you know, throughout the first nine, the back nine? I'll ask the same thing to Boxy as well. But what was the general feeling? When did the journalist present think, do you know what, Patrick Reed is going to win this one?
I would say it wasn't until, because you had Ricky Fowler birdieing four of the last seven holes, there wasn't a 100% assurance at any point until he closed out an 18, because one stroke can be lost so easily there. You got someone that's trying to win their major. Now, maybe I'm talking more for myself than I am for the group at large, but when Jordan had trouble at 18, what do you have, Boxy? 315 yards to the flag, second shot?
Yeah, I think he did, all uphill. I mean, there was no chance from there, but that's twice he had a couple of branches down that left side of 18, didn't he? I mean, I've never seen anyone where he was. I mean, it was almost...
He didn't even make the fairway.
Matt, he almost did the dread. He didn't get it past the ladies' tee.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never seen a non-amateur where Jordan was in that hole.
Yeah.
But however, having said that, when that happened, Dan, I do think that took some of the air out of the room. But what Ricky did behind him kept the question open. And so, to me, it wasn't until he completed that final putt at 18... Yeah, I mean, the camera kept cutting away to Ricky Fowler. He was waiting to see what was happening there, too. So from that standpoint, I think the Masters delivered on keeping the question open and lingering until the very end and keeping our spirits on edge along the way, which makes it fun.
Did you feel the same, Boxy? It was only until that final putt dropped.
No, I was different. I was there, you know, I'd had a long afternoon with the roast dinner and everything, and I'd made my way up to the pit, which for people in America is the bed. And I was lying in that watching the TV, and I'd thought, in my heart...
You started to flick around to Homeland. You thought the job was done.
I thought the job was D-O-N-E, done. Yes, no, so anyway, I thought, Matt, and I know you're going to disagree with me, but we do like to disagree on a couple of things every now and then. I thought it was done and dusted after 12. For me, in my mind, I thought, you know what? Patrick Reed's going to win this. That's only what I thought, but we're, you know, we're all entitled to our own opinion, aren't we?
We are indeed. Let's hear a little bit more from Patrick Reed now, who says he was motivated by what he thinks was a media belief that he wouldn't close out the Masters.
It was definitely probably the hardest mentally around a golf could possibly be. Everyone else was saying how great I was playing all week, how very impressed they were, but then, you know, come Saturday night and Sunday morning, they're like, oh, well, even though we said all these great things about how he's playing, we think Rory's going to win. And, you know, going into that, it just felt like, okay, well, you know, that takes off a little bit of that pressure off of me because I can just go out and try to play golf. You know, my caddy, Kessler, he did such an awesome job this week and, you know, especially today on keeping me in it. And, you know, when I birdied 14, you know, he looks at me and I wanted to go for it on 15 because I had a tiny little window. And, you know, he's like, no. He's like, we have the lead. He's like, chip it down there. He's like, let's try to make birdie with your wedge. Worst case scenario, we'll make par. And when I made par on 15, you know, and Jordan finished at 13, and Ricky was at 13 at that point, you know, he just looked at me and said, hey, it doesn't matter. Don't look at that board. It doesn't matter. He goes, it all comes down to us. He's like, go out and play golf. He's like, if you do what we do, he's like, we will win this golf tournament. Let's go do it. And of course, it didn't help that Ricky birdied the last to get it to one shot. But, you know, I just kept on reminding myself, and he kept on reminding me, just go do you, go play golf. And, you know, I was able to get through it mentally and just, you know, put together a solid 71.
Well, we saw Patrick Reed celebrating at the back of the 18th green with his wife, Justine. Tell us a little bit more, Matt, about the man, Patrick Reed.
He's a complicated guy on many levels. When you start to peel back the onion and try to understand, I think Patrick Reed is a guy that's taken – many years. I mean, he's a young man at 27, but he's taken many years to kind of become Patrick Reed, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
To realize who he is and where he fits. My interactions with Patrick have all been good. When I've been around him privately, when I've been around him publicly, he seems like a good guy. The one thing is that he's got this edge to him. You know, I'm going to hold the door for you and let you go through first. And he's going to, what are you holding the door for me for? You don't think you think you're better than me? No, it's okay. I'm not saying he's like that. What I'm saying is that he channels that all the time. He has this sense of I'm not getting the respect that I deserve. So I'll be really curious in this progression of him as a media personality, as you know, a celebrity athlete, as a member of the PGA Tour. I'm curious if this win now will in some way soften that, where he's going to say, hey, now I've proven who I am, or whether it will only heighten it to say, well, you thought I couldn't win one. Now you don't think I can validate it and win two, or you don't think I can win three, or whatever it is. But Patrick Reed is a complicated guy if you try to figure out all the different elements of who he is. I tend to try to judge people just based upon my relationship with them. And the Patrick Reed that I know has been a good guy. He has time for people. He thinks through before he answers a question. He never gives you platitude. It's never just like a quick or a dodge. He gives you good questions that he thinks through the answers to. It's definitely an interesting character to be this prominent now on golf's global stage.
Well, Patrick Reed's success has certainly drawn plenty of praise, not least from Jack Nicklaus, who tweeted, unbelievable gut shown again by Patrick Reed, lived off the par fives all week, and then not to birdie a single par five today and still shoot 71 to win. That's pretty darn good. Heartfelt congratulations on a well-deserved win. The Masters has a great champion. It won't be his last win in a major. Well, Reed is the first man ranked outside the world's top 20 to win the Masters since 2011. Victory moves him to 11th in the world. Reed has never broken 70 in four previous Masters attempts. This week, he went 69, 66, 67 and 71. No one has shot four rounds in the 60s, of course, at the Masters. And it's the first US 1-2-3 at the Masters since Woods, Mickelson and David Duval back in 2001. Let's discuss some of those who just failed to claim the green jacket. Ricky Fowler, first of all, it's a third runners-up finish in golf's four biggest events, and we can hear from him next.
And, you know, Patrick's—he's not scared. I think you guys have, you know, seen that previously from the Ryder Cups and the way he plays. He's not scared on the golf course. He'll play aggressive and he'll play his game. He won't back down. I don't necessarily see him as someone that backs up and will let you come back into the tournament. You have to go catch him. I mean, I am ready to go win a major, but this was kind of the first major week that I've understood that and known that and felt that. I gave it my all. I left everything out there on the golf course. And, you know, like I was talking about, I was just a little too far back. And to go out there and you know, like I said, leave everything out there, it would have been nice to have a few more coming in and give it a real chance. But we did everything we could. And Patrick went out there and outplayed all of us this week, and he earned it. Now, it was fun to get that birdie at the last and at least, like I said, keep him honest and make him earn it.
Well, that was Ricky Fowler, who came up one short. He put pressure on Patrick Reed. Matt, there's no doubt about that. How good was Ricky over the course of the 4 days, in your opinion?
I think it was a great Ricky Fowler that we saw. Particularly what I liked was the way that Ricky closed. And I'm not talking about the Players' Championship here, so let me qualify that. I'm talking about major championships. A couple points. You brought up the fact that this was his third runner-up finish in a major, but this was his first runner-up finish since 2014. You remember 2014 was when he hooked up with Butch Harmon, and that's when he had the four top five finishes in the majors that year. Well, he's been working with your man, Butchie Boxy, for all these years now. It's been since that year that he's had a runner-up finish. And that was a thing where so much expectation was now piled on top of Ricky that, well, clearly it's going to be an ascent from this point on. It hadn't been. So the fact that Ricky did what he did through the course of the week, but in particular yesterday, birding four of the last seven holes, told me that Ricky is ready to ascend. I still tend to think that when Ricky wins a major, it won't be from out in front. I think he's going to do it from behind and doing something spectacular like he did yesterday, though we'll have enough time to close the gap and get it done. But I think this is a different Ricky Fowler. I think this is a Ricky that the swing changes have taken now, and he's, from a maturity standpoint, he is ready to become a major champion. Boxy, what did you think?
I thought he was fantastic. You know, he was actually unlucky. If you think about it, 65, 67 at the weekend, 12 under par for the weekend. And, you know, you're going into that weekend pretty close to contention. You know, you're a couple under par. You're not too far away. I thought he was fairly unlucky not to cross the line, you know, in his own right, really. I mean, he did play nicely, Patrick Reed, but, you know, Reed could quite easily have shot 73, 74 quite comfortably. I mean, there's the pressure that Reed was under was massive. But Fowler, I just think, you know, Butch Harmon looking after him obviously is a great asset. But Fowler, I just feel every time there's a major coming on, he must think himself, do you know what, I'm beginning... It's getting a little bit like it was with Mickelson. Do you remember when he couldn't win a major? I would have to put Fowler in the same sort of class as Mickelson when he was playing really quite nicely. Every week, Mickelson was getting pressure about winning a major, Matt, wasn't he? And it wasn't happening. But once he did get it done, off he went.
Yeah, but I think it was for two different reasons. With Phil Mickelson, Phil had this, they called it Phil golf, right? He had this way of making choices that oftentimes were overly aggressive, and he paid a severe price for it, especially in major championships. With Ricky Fowler, as we saw, for example, in the front nine yesterday, he tends to be the other way. He gets overly cautious. He's not aggressive enough. He's not willing to risk losing in order to win. Well, on the back nine yesterday, Ricky became a different player. He was a player that was willing to hit the shots that he needed to hit at the time that he needed to hit them in order to set up opportunities for birdie, which he converted with his beautiful short game. So I think this was a huge stepping stone for him. I think he learned a ton in the setting that he was in yesterday, and I think it helped him overcome the deer in the headlights that I would keep a very close eye on him in the majors that lie ahead this year.
One other American who only just failed to Patrick Reed was Jordan Spieth. One that finished further down the leaderboard was Tiger Woods. Matt, your thoughts on those two players' performance at Augusta this week?
Jordan Spieth, watching him yesterday reminded me that we were back at Royal Birkdale. All of a sudden, he became Jordan Spieth the artist. His club became a brush, and he doesn't become consumed with club placement. He doesn't become consumed with face angle. He doesn't become consumed with alignment with the putter. He just becomes an artist and lets it flow from some well within him that at times he can channel, and he becomes this golfing beast. As far as Tiger Woods goes, I am not as surprised by Tiger's performance seemingly as everyone else is. I get the disappointment from those that wanted Tiger to contend or win and start to rewrite golf history again. But what happened with Tiger was he played well in a number of different tournaments during the Florida swing. But the crucible that is the examination of your game in every regard in a major championship and certainly at the Masters was one where it was going to reveal where the progression still has to be made, where the rust still lies. So I think and I know Tiger sets the standard, so don't get me wrong here, but I think from the standpoint of Tiger's march back into competitive form, he did as much as we could hope that he could do at this point. And he made the cut. This is him still coming back. I do think that Tiger will be capable of contending in other majors this year, but for the stepping stone, the staircase, it's a steep grade that he has to climb to get back to being top form globally and certainly in major championships. It was a reasonable performance.
Matt, well, we wish him well. We wish you well as well. Many thanks for coming on the Race to Dubai show. It has been a terrific Masters. We will speak again soon, no doubt.
Dan and Boxy, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Cheers, Matt. Bye-bye.
More about Tiger Woods shortly. Just on Jordan Spieth to wrap up, the American and former champion. Third, of course, 13 under, final round of 64. The best round of the week saw him continue his remarkable record at Augusta, adding a third to his win and 2 seconds in five attempts. I'm sure he wasn't interested in the course record of 63 or even a 62. The final round, 64, was sensational, but boy, he went close to making history at Augusta, didn't he?
He certainly did, yeah. He went, in my mind, he made history, but where he his t-shirt on the last. I mean, yeah.
It's the sort of thing I'd do.
Just about cleared the road. But I think he was there for 315 for a second shot up the hill. But no, he was. The interesting thing about, you know, these top players is I listened to Bubba Watson. He said, I'm not here to finish top five, top 10. I'm here to win. Spieth's exactly the same. Problem for Spieth was he was sort of three, maybe four holes ahead, and he was just running out of holes. Every time he got very close, there was a great chance, you know, especially 13 and 15 coming up, that Reed was going to birdie those.
Yeah, look back at the Friday 74. I think that's where really his chance went. As for John Rahm, fourth, 11 under, final round 69, including back-to-back birdies on the 13th and the 14th, which had him right in contention before he found the water on 15th. He's another player that's just going to go for the win. He was charging. He was looking to potentially make eagle on 15. Could have been world number one with a win at Augusta. He's just interested in major success. And given the fact that he'd not really played Augusta, or indeed majors particularly well, he can be proud of his performance.
Very. You could see how gutted he was there with his second shot on 15. It wasn't that bad a shot. Just, you know, the further left you go, the more you bring the water into play. But John Rahm hasn't had a bad time yet. And I don't mean, you know, in
the first time he's really contended in a major.
Yeah, but he's not, you know, he comes straight out of the blocks. He's winning tournaments left, right and centre. He's up to the top five in the world rankings. You know, I mean, he doesn't know what a bad time is yet. It will happen somewhere along the line. But, you know, for him, every morning's Christmas morning so far.
Well, the Spaniard was, of course, the top European finisher, just finishing one place ahead of Rory McIlroy, who was fifth at 9 under. He hit stunning shots into the second and the fourth, but followed those birdies with bogeys, and the Northern Irishman eventually signed for a 74. He has come out and said, I think 100% I can come back and win here. But we've talked about him already a little bit, Boxy. The shoulders just seem to drop a little bit. And all of the putting ills that we've seen over the previous year seem to flood back for me. I know yourself and Matt were talking about his swing and the way that he was taking his shots on, but the amount of short ones, he not just seemed to miss, but completely misread some of them.
Yeah, he did. I love watching McIlroy play. Absolutely love it, you know, and it frustrates the hell out of me when I'm watching it at home and I'm thinking, you know, you watch the putts just sliding by, you know, 10 feet and under, and you think, crikey, if he could just roll those in. You know, 65 on Saturday, 74 yesterday, it's purely putting. It was all putting. You see, he hit some wayward shots occasionally on the Saturday in that 65. I mean, he snap-hooked it into the azaleas, didn't he, up on the 13th on Saturday. But if it frustrates me, it must drive him mental, you know, that he plays so brilliantly. And then just a few of those putts. It's only putting with him. If he putts well, he shoots 65 every time he goes out. And that's exactly what he did on Saturday. Just wasn't his day yesterday. Simple as that.
Well, we've mentioned the top five at the Masters, but we need the complete top 10. Richard Boxall.
Tied 10th at 7 under par was Dustin Johnson and Tony Finau, who, I must just say, in that par 3 competition, when he turned his ankle over.
Did he actually put it back in again? Did he actually put it back in himself?
Yeah,
I saw
down.
That and I wasn't quite sure what he was doing.
No, that wasn't very good. But what a brilliant finish. I didn't think he was even going to tee up on Thursday. So anyway, getting a little excited there.
Top debutant, Tony Finau.
Correct and right. You're hit at parties and through to the next round. The top 10 for this tournament at 7 under par, Dustin Johnson, Tony Finau. Mark Leishman, 8 under par, finished 9th on his own. And then a tie for 5th was McIlroy, Cameron Smith, Henrik Stenson and Bubba Watson. They were at 9 under par. John Rahm was out on his own at 11 under par in full. 3rd was Jordan Spieth, 64 final round. Ricky Fowler, 2nd. And obviously your winner we've been talking about, Patrick Reed.
Well, for Henrik Stenson, it was a first ever Masters top 10. Justin Rose just outside the top 10, 12th in the end. Paul Casey was excellent on the final day with a closing 65. And Tommy Fleetwood shone on the Saturday with a 66. We had a fair European contingent and the vast majority played pretty well, Boxy.
They did, yeah. Fleetwood disappointed, as you say, very good Saturday, but 74 yesterday. He won't be too happy with that. Justin Rose never really got anything going, Rose. But again, you know, another fine player, a great performance, finished 6 under in total, which was still good enough for a top 12 finish.
And what about, as you say, Paul Casey's final round?
Because
at one stage he was on for the record, wasn't he?
Just about to say, yeah.
I'm sorry.
69-65, but with a bogey finish.
Started terrible. He only just made the cut by one, didn't he, I think, Paul?
Yeah.
And finally, your thoughts on Tiger Woods returning to Augusta. Many people had him pegged as a potential winner, but in the end, he was tied 32nd.
I thought he might finish in the top 10. I didn't think he'd win, I must say. When we spoke to Matt Adams, he brought up a very good point about, you know, he's playing in the other events, nearly winning them, playing well, but to show if there is any rust anywhere about, if you haven't played in majors for a while, you know, somewhere like Augusta, if you're
that's
not quite
track,
on...
That's his track, isn't it?
Well, it is, but it'll still find you out. It'll still find you out, because if you're not on form... I mean, trust me, if you went there, what do you play
with? Yeah, but hang on a minute, right? If you're saying that about Tiger Woods, how do you equate what the likes of Bernhard Langer and Freddie Couples do every single year at the Masters? Freddie Couples could hardly walk. He still played well.
Yeah, but what do you mean? What are you saying?
Well, he'd not played at all. I think he played once this year on the Champions Tour. So he was rusty, but what I'm saying is that Augusta is a classic horses for courses venue, and Tiger Woods shouldn't feel ring rusty at a venue like that and should still be able to compete if he's good enough.
Yeah, but maybe he's not major-wise yet. Fred Couples still finished three over.
I know, but I'm just saying. You know, you'd expect Tiger Woods, having come second, at the Valspar, was it, to compete and be better than 32nd?
Yeah, I thought Tiger would finish. I thought he might finish in the top 10. I honestly didn't think he would win. I just didn't think. I mean, it's great to see him back and remarkable what he's done. But I still didn't think he would win.
I'd say what I didn't think as well, that Sergio Garcia would sign for a 13 on the 15th in round one. He tied 82nd, the defending champion. 15 over. He put five balls in the water, the joint worst score on any hole at Augusta National.
So he was, 15 over for the two rounds? Yeah, and he had a 13 on one hole, which
on
was
15,
eight.
Yeah.
So he was seven over, so he would have missed the cut even with a par there, wouldn't he? But, you know, he won it last year. He's got the jacket. You can't take it away from him. I just think he would have hated hanging around all weekend.
Well, Sergio Garcia missed the cut, unfortunately, the defending champion. Is he in the world top 10 still, boxing?
He is. He's just sneaking right on that very edge there. He's in 10th position. Brooks Koepka is 9th. Hideki Matsuyama is 8th. McIlroy is now 7th. 6th is Ricky Fowler. Justin Rose is 5th. John Rahm is 4th. Jordan Spieth is 3rd. Justin Thomas is in the 2nd spot. And still leading the way is Dustin Johnson.
As you mentioned, world number one, Dustin Johnson, missed last year's Masters. Again, a player that was not quite up in the vanguard over the course of the week.
No, but again, not far off. You know, finished in a tie for 10th alongside Tony Finau. Very consistent, really. 73 opened up with, wouldn't have been happy with that. 68, 71 and 69 in the final round. But again, you know, world number one, just creeping along there, easing into the top 10. A lot of players would be totally deliriously happy with that. Just the normal run of the week for Johnson.
Ryder Cup rankings, lots of points on offer for the Europeans.
Yes, there were plenty of points. This is how it stands. You get four players from the world rankings and four players from the European Tour list, Race to Dubai standings. So I'll give you the European Tour standings at the moment. Tyrrell Hatton, Justin Rose, John Rahm and Ross Fisher are 1, 2, 3 and 4. And then followed after that on the world rankings are Rory McIlroy, Tommy Fleetwood, Sergio Garcia and Alex Noren, who I thought actually might do a little bit better than miss the cut this week. I had him down for an each way at the Masters, but didn't. And of course, that's your eight. And then the captain, Thomas Bjorn, has got four wild card picks.
Now then, predictions from last week. Normally, one of the selections has to be from outside of the top 50 in the final 2017 Race to Dubai standings. But last week, it was a free choice for two players plus one outsider. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut. I got the most points, Boxy. Are you listening?
I am listening.
Rory McIlroy, who was 5th, got me 10. Justin Rose, who was 12th, got me 5. And Kiradek Apibanrat, as my outsider, tied 44th. So I didn't get a single point for him. Jamie Spence went for Justin Thomas, Bubba Watson and Alex Noren to amass 10 points. And Jack Haywood, our guest from Golfing World, went for Justin Thomas, Jason Day and Charles Schwartzel and picked up 5 points. The current standings are presenter on 90, co-presenter on 30. Have you helped the co-presenter score at all this year? I've actually weighed in with some points.
I got,
yes or no?
Yes, I got Alex Noren for the WGC.
Oh, really?
He lost in the semis.
Okay.
So that must be worth something.
I think you probably got half a point for that. Race to Dubai standings, Boxy.
Yes.
How do we look?
Hao Tong Li is in 10th. Cabrera Bayo is 9th. 8th is Alex Noren. Cameron Smith is 7th. 6th is Tyrrell Hatton. McIlroy is 5th. Kiradek Apibanrat 4th. Tommy Fleetwood 3rd. Shubhankar Sharma 2nd. And leading the way now is Patrick Reed.
To the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game next, and congratulations to listener Danny Cole, who scored the most points in the show's mini-league with Patrick Reed in his ranks and all six players inside the Masters top 20. He's up to 2nd overall behind new leader Chris Coles. In the global standings, David Mitchison and Ian Wilson were the joint best scorers last week, while Rob Kelly is top of the world. You can join in at europeantour.com/myeuropeantour. On to this week's event, which is the 91st edition of the Open de España, which is taking place at the Centro Nacional de Golf for only the second time, the other occasion being in 2007. It's the home of the Royal Spanish Golf Federation, and it's situated just north of Madrid. What type of player can be successful around this venue, Richard?
Well, we say it week in and week out. It's the ones that hit the fairway. You know, Charles Schwartzel won one round here. It's, you know, some holes on that, on the in the middle of the course are quite exposed. It's quite high up there. I mean, Madrid is quite high anyway, as we well know. It's well above sea level. But there's plenty of decent golf courses around Madrid. Always need a little bit of breeze to blow to make it interesting. And the greens are always in great condition wherever you play over in Spain.
I'm obliged, I'm contractually obliged to read out the producer's notes on the course. So here we go. Opened in 2006 with the aim of promoting and providing golf to everyone, John Rahm combined his studies and golf at the Centro Nacional for 2 years. And currently, the course is drier than usual at this time of year due to very low rainfall and strong frosts that have not favoured the germination of native grasses. Now, we know that world number four, John Rahm, is playing. As we know, it's a course that's very familiar to him. He played very well at the Masters, of course, so he's got a big chance. But, Boxy, who else is playing?
I'll tell you who's playing this week. It's a good field. Jaidi, Matteo Manassero, Jordan Smith, Paul Dunn, Eddie Pepperell, Matt Wallace is playing as well. The young Italian, Renato Paratore, he's fairly impressive. I like the way he plays, Renato Paratore. He just gets on with it, doesn't mess around. Torbjørn Olesen's playing. Andrew Johnston, Beef Johnston, who won this 2 years ago down in the south of Spain, is playing as well.
Now, predictions next, Boxy. Obviously, John Rahm is the big draw, but to make it more sporting, we'll leave him to one side. We'll have two picks each. Usual rules apply, as we've discussed. I'm going to go for Aaron Rye as my outsider, the player that's outside of the top 50 from last year, a top 10 on his last outing. Hopefully, he won't be too ring rusty, having not performed over the last couple of weeks. And my other selection, my main selection, is Paul Dunn. We know how well he played last year, and he comes into this event off the back of a couple of top tens. Boxy, who are you going for?
Okay, I'll go for Pablo Larrazábal. And I'm going to go for the winner in 2016, Andrew Beef Johnston.
Can you tell us why you like those two?
Johnston, because he's decided to come back and play on the main tour, which I think, the European tour, which is our tour, which I think is a good move. I think it was hard work for him going backwards and forwards over the Atlantic, to be quite honest. And Larrazábal, he's a great manoeuvre of the ball. You know, left to right, right to left, high ones, low ones. Gets quite windy out there, and I think he plays well in the wind.
Well, that just about wraps it up for this week's Race to Dubai show. Join us next week when we'll have a full review of the action in the Open de España. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest European Tour news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Boxy's favourite Snapchat via europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. And don't forget that you can subscribe and review the podcast on iTunes as well. But for now, from Richard Boxall,
goodbye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We will see you next time.